Psalm 9:17 says, "The wicked shall be turned into hell, and all the nations that forget God." Miss Casey, turn this down just two or three notches, because Brother Kurt's back there this morning. I don't want to be, just a little more even. Crank it down just a buzz more. As long as you've got tape, all right, that's good. That's the basis for what we've been doing over the last 6 months, and now again this 6 months. The idea is that God has some things to say about nations. All right, I guess you kind of have to justify why you're doing what we're doing here. You know, why in the world would you teach history in church? I don't know of anybody else that's ever attempted to do anything like this. And it calls for some explanation, particularly from the standpoint of those who would rather you didn't teach it. Those would be people who are basically government officials, and people would prefer that you didn't hear what things you're going to hear in this class. There is supposedly a separation of church and state, and that separation of church and state has come to the point now that if you are a preacher, you have no right to even comment on matters of the state from the pulpit. If you're a preacher, you certainly could never seek public office. You'd be shot down in an instant as trying to pull religion together with politics. And what has happened is effectively religious people with religious views, deep-founded religious views, have all but been excluded from the system. You have a right to vote as a deeply religious person. You have no right to speak out, because as soon as you do, they're going to impose upon you the idea of you're violating the separation of church and state. And, you know, why would you go ahead and teach this? I think it calls for some explanation. That's one of the things I wanted to do this morning, is kind of set the stage again. We've been away from here for several months now, about 4 months, and so we kind of set a stage, review just a little bit, and then wade right back in again. But first of all, there is a need for a preacher or whoever, okay? It doesn't have to be just a preacher, but I'm justifying my teaching of American history this morning. There's a need for somebody to do it, first of all. It doesn't necessarily have to be a preacher. The fact that I'm doing it is a sad commentary to the educational system of America. The fact that I would have to take my time and teach American history is terrible. There ought to be schools that would teach that. And, of course, immediately the response would be, well, they do teach American history in school. I know, I have the textbooks. And if that's teaching of American history, America is in real sad shape, because there is no deep teaching of the truths. There is a basic general overview. Most of the educational system today has moved on to Goals 2000 and headed out in that direction. The educational system that we confront today in public schools, and sadly even in a lot of Christian schools, at least as far as textbooks are concerned, have nothing to do with what happened in the past. You know, most academic studies today have nothing to do with giving the student a foundation. When you and I were in school, I guess most of you are my age or a little younger, a little older, somewhere in there. When you were my age in school, the basis in teaching was to give a student a foundation on which to learn. And by doing that, giving a student the ability to think and a basis on which to learn, the hope was that they could then go on and take the leadership of a nation and govern the country. That's no longer the design of American education. American education now is to change people into what they want them to be. That's all that it's there for. They want to, basically, they want to govern the thought processes, they want to govern the ideologies, they want to govern the goals of every student that's coming out of a high school or a college situation in this day and time. It has really become, to me, in my thinking, an educational system's like a big corral. And what they want to do is get all the cattle in there and brand them and get them labeled so that everybody knows who they belong to, and you dare not let them out into the pasture for fear that you might lose them. So the educational system has become the means of keeping everybody thinking alike and going in the same direction. The problem with that is this: as a Christian, I'm not going the same direction they're going. My directives and my goals are not in the same goal that the countries have become in the last few years. And somebody said, well, that's just not right. No, it's not the country's place to set goals and directives. I mean, this is a nation founded by the people. It's the people's design to take this nation wherever they want to go. I read a book not long ago, and part of the idea of that book was the change in people's attitudes. For instance, there's a majority of people in America now that believe abortion is fine. And this guy's whole thinking is, see there, we believe in majority rule. But wait a minute, 10 years ago that wasn't the case. And 10 years ago we didn't believe in majority rule when it came to it. We believed in education. You got to watch this crowd real close, because what they're going to do is infiltrate an educational system. And by the way, that's what you've got, 10 years of education. An educational system that's been teaching boys and girls for 10 years that abortion is fine, abortion is okay, and now, finally, as fruit of their labor, the majority of people in America believe abortion is all right. And so now they say, well, we believe in, you know, this is a country governed by the majority, but what happened 10 years ago when the majority of people believed abortion was wrong? You see, the schools have become a means, and the government has now incorporated the schools as a means to an end, and that is to control the thought processes of people. One of the great religious debates that was fought years ago, before this nationalistic idea ever came around, Martin Luther kind of brought it all to a head with the Reformation, and that was the right to freedom of conscience. You have a right to think and believe whatever you want to. And that was the argument, really, of the Reformation. Does a church have a right to impose even to the thought processes? And if you read some of the accounts of the Spanish Inquisition, people were judged, and some of them, treated brutally, tortured, not for what they did, but for something they said that was construed to mean something else. And right down the line, you had probably as many devout Catholics killed, or at least a good number of them, that really hadn't done anything against the church. But it was eluded because of something they said. You were not to have the freedom of conscience. If the church said it, you had to believe it no matter what. I think it was Luther or one of his men who said if the church said that the sky was yellow, then you had to believe it. Otherwise, suffer the penalty. And you and I come from an old stock of whatever that believes you've got a right to think and believe whatever you want to. No nation, no religion has a right to do that. You are absolutely free under God. And this is not a religious denomination that proposes to set down the basis on which everybody ought to live. I don't believe that. I don't want the right to tell everybody how to live. As far as mandating it and making it a law, I don't want that right. I don't think church law has a place where you say, well, this is, I have a book, and I believe this book is what tells me how to live. This book is what lays out the law. This book is what gives me the orders under which I must live. If you folks just come in, I need you to sign a piece of paper, wherever that thing is. Where's it gone? Is it still going around? Okay, make sure it gets back to the back again as soon as we're done. I believe that everybody's free under God to take this book and live the way God wanted them to live. I don't need anybody else telling me how to do things. All right? You say, well, why government? Government is there as it's the will of the people. The only reason government exists is because I allow it to exist. Now, boy, you're not going to hear that on Capitol Hill. You see, you exist for the good of the state now. That's called socialism. Under what we have in democracy, government exists for the good of the people, for the will of the people. That's why you get phrases like the right of the governor, the consensus of the governed. How many of you have heard that? Government only exists with the consent of the governed. What that means is government only exists if I allow it to exist. It exists because there's some things, some authority that I have given to the government that were my authority in the beginning. Government doesn't have any authority at all but what I have given to it. Okay? And I think I used the illustration before of a bunch of ranchers that move into a territory and set up cattle ranches. And they've each got 500 or 600 head of cattle and 200 or 300 head of horses, and they've got a huge range area, and rustlers begin to come into that area. And they begin to steal cattle. Well, that rancher has an option, okay? He can get his rifle and set out there over his herd and watch that herd of cattle 24 hours a day and shoot the rustlers as they come. That's what he can do. That's his right. They're his cattle, and somebody's messing with them or trying to steal them, he has the right to protect what is his. All right? Or all those ranchers can get together and say, I'll tell you what, let's get a sheriff and pay him money to do this for us. And so those ranchers get together collectively, and they hire a sheriff and a posse, and those men are entrusted with that authority. Now, do the ranchers give up that authority? Well, in a sense, they do, but the man that has the authority doesn't have it because of who he is or what he is. He has it because that authority was given to him. And it is now his job to do for those ranchers what they were going to have to do on their own. That, in a smaller nutshell, is what government's all about. As people, we have given to our government the right to make certain decisions, to regulate certain areas of life, to perform certain functions in life. Government was not endowed with those rights at the very beginning. All the rights and all the liberties were in the people. And government legally only has the rights that we give to it. Now, you want to be very careful with and very sure of that. You'd be amazed how many people that sounds absolutely absurd to them. Because they've been led to believe that, well, you know, the government's there and it takes care of us and it's our job to feed it and it's our job to clothe it and it's our job to... No. Government's job is to do what we told it to do and shut its mouth. Basically and simply. That's government's job. And so you need to understand the very workings of government. Now, several men years ago, men by the name of John Locke was a good example, and Blackstone was an attorney that wrote back in the 1600s, and those men were men that basically founded the principles on which America was built as far as its governmental structure. John Locke believed in the sovereignty of the individual. What I just gave you basically is a synopsis of what John Locke and Blackstone both believe, is that no government had a right to exist without the consent of the people. And they entrusted their authority to the government. That's the only authority the government had. And the reason that they wrote and the reason that they put those ideologies out was because they didn't come up in those systems. The men that wrote those things, John Locke and Blackstone and others, but they're the two most famous, the ones that our forefathers quoted most often. The reason those men wrote and said what they said is because they were raised under totalitarian systems. They were raised under monarchies where the king had absolute authority, and whatever he said, you had to do it. You didn't have any right to do anything about it. You just were there for the good of the king. And they saw the corruption in that. And they said, wait a minute, that's not the way it was intended. And they went back before government ever existed, man existed. Therefore, man precedes government. And if man precedes government, then government has to grow from man. You follow what I'm saying? Now, this is not this kind of philosophy this morning. But their whole ideology then was that, hey, the monarchies are wrong. And what happened as a result of those, even the monarchies were reduced to parliamentary rule because of the teachings of those men, where at least in England today, there still isn't a queen or a king that makes all the rules. It's a parliament. Now, they were right as far as it goes. And I'll put it to you this way. They were right. As long as you exclude God from the picture, they're absolutely right. When you bring God into the picture... And they did, but not in the sense of bringing him into the governmental idea. I'm not sure that they believed the Lord was coming or anything like that. What they said was exactly what I believe, with one exception, and that is this. God is over man. Okay? It's not God, government, and man. It's God, man, and then government. And man is of higher authority than any government is. An individual, his word is worth more than any government would ever say. And in America, we've made a big turnaround now to where your word doesn't mean anything. But the word that comes from Washington means everything. And that's not the way that it's intended. Washington should set up and take notice when an American speaks. All right? If I ran the business, if whatever our business was, today we're going to go into the manufacturing of pianos, all right, just for this morning. And I produce this business, I put all my money up, build the factory, and import all the wood and whatever else, strings that we need to build pianos, and I hire you people. Okay? And you people now begin to build this piano for me. Well, who am I? I'm just one person. And all of you, you're more numerous than I am. And before long, you get together and you say, wait just a minute. Hey, he's only one guy. And I mean, after all, we do the building of the pianos. And before long, you come back and you say, listen, we're not going to build pianos anymore. We're going to build airplanes. And I say, well, now, you know, listen, it's my factory. I pay the bills. I buy the material. You say, it doesn't matter. We have the right now to tell you, since we're more numerous, we have more power than you have, and so we're going to tell you that's exactly what happened to government. We said to some fellows a long time ago, listen, you go up there to Washington, and you regulate commerce, and you take care of this and that for us, and that's what we want you to do. And now they've turned around and said, hey, wait a minute, you do this and this and this and this. Wait a minute, Washington. We're the ones that own the show. It's not the government that owns us, it's we who own the government. Now, why teach American history? Because that's a principle that they don't want you to understand. Obviously, if we go back to the scenario, you now have told me we're going to build airplanes, and for 10 generations we've been building airplanes. The worst thing could happen to you would be for me to bring out the original documents and prove that I own the factory and that it is my money and that indeed it is my place. You wouldn't want those documents to come out. It would be a threat to your seized authority. So there is a movement in America today not to teach our founding documents. Why? Because we live in as much of a totalitarian system as Locke and Blackstone ever did. They had a king, we have a Congress. They had a king, we have a judicial system. They had a king, we have an executive branch. But all in all, you know, just the existence of an executive and a judicial and a legislative branch does not ensure democracy. Little boys and little girls are being taught we've got democracy in America because we have all these checks and balances. Listen, when you've got checks and balances that have been proven corrupt, you don't have checks and balances. When you've got a system where at least two of the three branches right now could be proven to be corrupt. I mean, you're living in a day and age when there are criminal proceedings against the White House and against members of Congress. Criminal indictments. Now, what would that say to you? I'll tell you what it says. You've got two out of three branches that are proven corrupt. Now, I'm not going to cast any stones at the Supreme Court, but I will say this. You got two. Where did the guys that sit on the Supreme Court come from? They're placed there by the other two things. Now, you say, preacher, I'll tell you what I'm doing. I'm making nothing but statements of truth to you this morning. And I haven't indicted anybody in the Supreme Court at all. I'm just saying those guys got on the bench because of the guys that were in the other two offices. And what you have is, if you've got a corrupt system, you've got a corrupt system. And if you can't pass that off as democracy. You can't pass that off as democracy. I believe in democracy. I believe in majority rule. I believe in the right to vote. But what have you voted on? What have you voted on? I mean, you look at it, I'll give you several things right now. The majority of Americans, about 97% of Americans in the most recent polls, believe that Congress should be controlled by term limitations. 97% of America. Now, what about majority rule? You think you're going to get it? Not going to happen. Now, let me ask you, is government acting as your agent then? Why teach it? Number one, nobody else is going to teach it. There's a design for folks not to get it. If we can be kept in ignorance, if we can keep our children in ignorance, the Bible said you'll know the truth, and the truth will what? Set you free. We don't want people to be free. And so there is a movement on now. You're in the process now. You've gone back to the treaty. You watch all the treaties that are flying around here. You don't have to worry about that. And see, the treaties are now being handled at the United Nations level. And most Americans think, that's foreign trade. And you know what? A treaty is one piece of legislation that is binding upon the courts and upon the legislatures of every state in America. If a treaty is passed, it becomes binding upon every state. That's why they couldn't get NAFTA passed originally, because it was a treaty. So they changed it to an agreement. But GATT, that's coming up right now, is a treaty. You say, what's the difference? The difference is a treaty becomes law in every state in America, regardless of whether you vote on it or want it or not. You've got a treaty right now before the United Nations called the Rights of the Child. That right guarantees the right of every child in the world, the freedom of religion, the freedom of expression, the freedom of choice to every child in the world. Now, I'm going to ask you a question. You believe your child has the right to choose where he goes to church? You believe your child has a right to watch R-rated movies or curse and smoke and drink? Then you better get ready, because this treaty's fixing to pass, and it becomes binding upon all 50 states. You'll go to jail if you violate the treaty. You see, there are different ways to bring things about. And right now, the focus of America is on Congress saying, hey, we got to do something about this. We got to stop this. And while all that's going on, our general United Nations is making all these rules for us that are also tying us up. Why teach it? Nobody else is going to teach it. The revisionist history you hear it now on the radio at least once a week, revisionist history, revisionist history. The idea behind revisionist history is to go back and look at history not from what was said or done, but from what it produced. And, of course, everybody believes that America now is just a terrible place because, we've destroyed all our resources, and we're oppressive to minorities and women, and we're puritanical, and people, these crazy people trying to shoot people in front of abortion clinics. That's what all was produced. So let's go back and rewrite history with that in mind. And that's what's being done. What's being done in this nation is we're changing the good people to bad people, and the bad people to good people. Monday, I guess, will be October the 12th. Last year, I think, was the 500th anniversary of the discovery of America, 1492, 1992. And you go back and get some articles. Some of you don't even know, you can still go to the library and pull old newspapers. It's amazing how many people are ignorant that resources are still available. And it wouldn't hurt every adult and every family to take their children downtown to the library every once in a while and pull some of that stuff and let them look at it. But you look at what they did to Columbus 2 years ago. Matter of fact, I defy you to go back and find a good article written about Columbus in 1992. You're going to find out what a terrible guy he was, how all the Indians got killed, and how this. You know what that is? That's written from a perspective of looking back and judging history in the light of where I am right now. That's not the purpose of history. The purpose of history is to judge right now in light of where I was. See the difference? And revisionist history is a movement to eliminate God from all of history. Eliminate God from all of history and make God out eventually to be the bad guy. That's the whole end of it. Make God out to be the bad guy. Remove God from history. Don't allow God to have any place. I talked about the book I read several weeks ago called Why the Religious Right is Wrong. That's in the public library. You can buy that. Or you can check it out and read it. But the whole idea there was all these people running around that are saying that God was involved in America, they're wrong. And he'll quote two or three quotes from different people to prove that these people are wrong. And really, you can read the book for yourself, kind of a staggering attempt. But the reason I think it's a staggering attempt is because I've read the other stuff. If I had not read the works of Thomas Jefferson, if I had not read the writings of Washington and Patrick Henry, I would believe what the guy had to say. Because his design is to make religious people look like a bunch of buffoons. You know, they, how could they possibly know anything about history, you know? These are the same people, you know, and it's the illusion. The stereotypes of the 60s are not gone. You know, the blacks in the 60s used to holler about stereotyping. Well, you just believe everybody's black as a criminal. You believe everybody's black as this. Listen, right now the nation believes anybody's religious is an abortion murderer. You're the ones that are stereotyped now. You're the ones that are cast into a stereotype now. And if you go out and tell somebody you're a Christian, they immediately back away from you. They think you're wacko. They think you're crazy. The revisionists have effectively turned the tide, and we've been teaching our children that God had nothing to do with the founding of America. That's why I'm teaching. Secondly, no academic emphasis. With Goals 2000, we're not placing any emphasis at all in history. Reading and writing and history and arithmetic and those type things are passé. Now we're moving toward a goals society where we want to generate the thinking processes of people. I'm not saying these people that are involved in this are all corrupt. Okay? Sometimes we get paranoid. We think, you know, conspiracy. I don't think it's conspiracy. I think it's stupidity. For the most part, I think it's stupidity. You look at, if you can just get around people that are educated and watch them, they're like children. They really are. They're like infants. They have to be around their own kind or they feel very uncomfortable. They have their own little language that they use, you know, and they look down their noses at everybody else. They're just like little infants. And because of that, that makes them very subject. They don't know how to think. They went to school for 4 years to learn not to think. If you don't believe that, ask any college student anything definitive and see what they tell you. Well, I really don't know. I'm not sure that we can say, and I don't think with any clarity, nobody knows anything. And so you've got this little elitist group that don't know anything. Now, somebody above them can tell them what to think and they'll buy it. You can see that in their appreciation of art. You go into art museums and look around, and I mean, you know, I enjoy art as much as the next guy does, I guess. But you go look at some of that stuff, and it is absolutely, my children could have done much better when they were 2 and 3 years old. And there it hangs on the wall, and you know what? You got a bunch of educated people going, you know, the deep aspect here of the conflict of the inner self with the, you know what that is? That's a bunch of tripe. That's what that is. But people are educated into that. You know, they're educated to see it's not really beautiful unless you can't see the beauty. See, you have to look at that hidden beauty there. And so you get this guy, he's got, you know, wood chips and chainsaw parts and motorcycle pieces and rusted out mufflers and, oh, you know, that speaks of the great struggle of the American. No, that's garbage. But if you and I were to walk into a museum and say that, you know what they'd say? Uneducated fool. Never been educated to appreciate the finer. No. I've never been put in a corral and told what's good and what's bad. I have the right to make up my own mind. And that crowd's given up on that. There is no emphasis, though. That's what they want. And I say this, I'm not sure there's a conspiracy as much as there is stupidity. Those people, there may be, and I believe, to be honest with you, the devil's behind it all. And I, as we get down here in a minute, I'll show you, I believe the devil's, he's guiding the course of everything. He is the God of this world, the Bible says. Jesus Christ is not the God of this world. The one the world worships, the one the world adores, is the devil. And the devil is guiding the course of this world to a day where he can step off and run the show and nobody will squawk. And he's just about there. But the way you do that is you get the elite running the show, and then you get the underlings where they're just standing there like baby birds with their mouths open waiting for whatever garbage you drop into it. And then they're the ones that look down on the masses. And then you take those same people, I'll tell you what you do with them. You put them in Hollywood where everybody's seeing them. You put them in the classrooms where they're teaching boys and girls. You put them in places of influence, you put them in political positions, and all at once you're controlling the whole world with a bunch of people that don't have any earthly idea what's going on. They hadn't got a clue. You say there's conspiracy. No, they're stupid. stupid. I think it was Ed was telling me about a meeting they had out here at the park where you could come and talk to some of the politicians that are running for office, and they sent some of them sent representatives because they couldn't be here, you know, and I'm here representing so-and-so, and it was a forum. You could ask questions. And some of these people didn't even know where their candidates stood on certain issues. Here's a guy came to represent this political candidate, and when somebody asked him a question, he had to say, well, I'm not real sure where he stands on that. What are you here for then? What is the purpose in your existence? And they might as well hang you and illuminate another mouth we're having to feed. You certainly are not doing the job you're supposed to do. But if you said something like that, they'd think, you know, how insensitive you are. How uncaring you are. I mean, the fact that I don't understand what his position on gun control or health care or Bill Clinton, or, that's totally irrelevant. I'm here to help you. I'm here to help you decide how to vote. You say, what is that? That's the stupid elite. Not educated, the stupid elite. And they're there. And because they're in positions of influence and affluence, our children come up wanting to follow them. TV, for all the good or bad, you can put, I'll tell you, one of the real dangers of television is it puts heroes in front of your children. And those heroes are the stupid elite. And your children come up thinking just because Barbara Streisand thinks gay rights is fine, then how terrible is it that we would vote against gay? I thought it was majority rule. If we believe in majority rule, let's put gay rights to a vote. Let's do it. You know why we can't do it? Well, you know, we want to protect their civil rights. We want to protect their civil rights until they become a majority and then hang your civil rights. Wait and see if that doesn't happen. Why teach it? Two reasons. Revisionist history is trying to change it. Number two, there's no emphasis in education anymore on history. Therefore, somebody has to do it. Number two, why teach it? Because it gives you a line on the past. I said before, the revisionist way of thinking is let's interpret history in light of where we are. That was never the purpose of history. You go back to the very earliest accounts of history, Josephus and beyond, and their purpose was to present the facts so that people in the future can look and see where they are in relation to where they were. Find meaning in where they are from where they were. The idea of history is to look back and say, where in the world are we? Now you look at it this way. If we had been descendants of the pagan Roman civilization, and in the pagan Roman civilization there they had burned Christians at the stake and they had fed them to the lions and fought with them in the Colosseum and destroyed them, if that had been our history, and now we were living in Plymouth, Massachusetts in 1623, and in 1623, we had come through, we could look back at history and see the persecutions of Christians and the deaths of Christians who stood for what they believed. And yet here we are in 1623, we're looking at a 70% mortality rate. We're looking at people dying of starvation. We're looking at people living in places they can't even provide enough cold and heat to heat themselves in the winter. They can't get their crops to grow. I mean, they're on the basis of looking. They got a very bleak present. But you see what I'm saying? When you can look to the past, you can get a line and say, listen, where I am right now is not nearly what it was back here. And therefore, I can appreciate where I am, even though it may not be all that would be desired. Or, in the condition I'm in right now, with all the modern technology and all the innovations and all the conveniences that I have, if I look back to history, I can see we're really in trouble. You see, I judge where I am from where I was. And that's not a revisionist history. It's important for you to know that. You say, why? Because sometimes when you get lost, the very best thing you can do is go back where you started. Sometimes that's the only hope you have. One thing they taught me when I was learning to fly was, sometimes flying at night, you can't see clouds at night like you can during the day. And the worst thing happening to you if you're not an instrument flyer is to get in the clouds. I've told you about that before. You lose all perception of everything. You don't even feel gravity. The plane creates its own gravity. And you can fly upside down, not even know where you are. And so they teach you immediately, when you get in a cloud and can't see the ground and can't see the stars, the first thing you do, you look at your heading indicator. And if it shows you flying the course of 270 degrees, you turn in a 20-degree bank and you do 180 degrees and go back exactly the same way you came in. You're going back where you came from. Why? Because you don't know whether that cloud drops down 5,000 feet. You may want to drop underneath it and hit the ground. You may try to climb up through it and get into icing conditions and get ice all over your wings and crash and kill yourself. You may think you can go through it and fly right into a thunderstorm and have it snap both your wings off. The only safe bet is go back where you came from. You see, you know what was back there. You don't know what's up there. And if I can eliminate, I got this thing I read to you the last time from the synthesis of Psychopolitics, written by Kenneth Galf, or translated from Russian into American by Kenneth Galf. The statement was this: if we could effectively kill the national pride and patriotism of just one generation, we will have won that country. Therefore, there must be continual propaganda abroad to undermine the loyalty of the citizens in general and the teenager in particular. That's where we are. What national pride do you have right now? What patriotism do you have right now? I'm almost ashamed when I see the American flag. You say, where are we? We're on the verge of losing everything we've got because they've done it. If it's that way for us, think of what it is for the teenagers. And they're going to run the show next year. Why teach American history? Because of the fact that I need to keep a line on where I've come from. I want my son and my daughters to know that, hey, when you get out here and you can't tell where you're going, look to the past. You can always go back. Those people, listen, they may not have had all the conveniences. They may not have had, but they knew where they were, and you can draw a bead on where they are. We've got to teach it. We've got to teach it to our young people who, when they inherit a government that may be full of holes and may be riddled with corruption, they know somehow, where are you going to build a new society? Somebody said, let's change it. Let's rebuild America. What are you going to build? You better keep your eye on the past because they built something there that worked pretty good. But if we eliminate the past, you've got nothing to work with. You've got nothing to work with. Why teach American history? Number three, because I understand the future. You say, what makes you so? I understand the future because I have the book of the future right here in front of me. I mean, sometimes people, when they teach history, are trying to draw, you know, here's the way it's going to be. I watch a little public television because that's, to me, humorous. It's better than comedy when you watch these people talking about saving the water and, you know, changing it all over and you know, the changes we're going to make, and how, you know, we're looking off to a brighter tomorrow and a better future tomorrow. And, you know, because the reason it's funny to me is I remember those same guys 10 years ago talking about, you know, how if we're not careful, we're going to blow each other up with nuclear weapons. And you know, I think the fear of nuclear attack in 1960 was like number one fear of American people. Right now it's like number 240. Why? Well, you know what they were talking about in 1960. Somebody said, no, we generated this. We brought this concern. No, Ronald Reagan and the Republicans did that. You know, and they did it by lying. They did it by corruption and cheating. That's how they did it. The idea that we put all these things on TV and let the little kids watch it so they protested nuclear weapons and all this garbage. And so we brought it. No. They say, well, we've really changed the No, we haven't. Did you know that under the new treaty under which we reduce our nuclear weapons, that Russia has reduced half as many as they're supposed to? The United States is ahead of schedule dismantling its nuclear arsenal, and Russia has only dismantled half of what they were supposed to. And by the way, the half that they dismantled, you and I paid to dismantle. Yeah, it's still pointed right to us. What are you saying? I'm saying this. You get into this situation where this crowd thinks that, boy, we're headed for this bright new tomorrow. We're headed for this. No, we're headed for destruction. Now, in the last 2 years, that's been interpreted as being the number one identifier of a cult. This crowd just got killed over in Switzerland and Canada. You know, one of the first things, they were apocalyptic in their viewpoint. You know what apocalypse means? That's revelation in Latin. You know what they're telling you? They're telling you these people over here, they were revelation believers. How many believe the book of Revelation? You're a cult. You're a cult. And now, you know, I heard there's massive suicide and how they all... No, then they found out somebody killed them. I could be the Swiss ATF for all we know. I did a good job in Waco. I know where the future is. There is no peace, saith my God, to the wicked. Are we going to have peace? Is the United Nations going to be able... No. Now I'm going to ask you a question. I become a threat to the United Nations then. Because I'm saying you can't do what you're trying to do. It ain't going to happen. Therefore, I become the outcast. They say, well, we're going to have this global economy. We're going to put together this global government. We're going to all be citizens of the same happy-faced, smiley little country. And our state motto is going to be, have a nice day. And our state flag is going to be a white flag for cowardice with a big yellow sunshine on with a smiley face. And we're just all going to exist like that forever. It ain't going to happen, folks. It ain't going to happen. You walk into the United Nations in New York, I'm not sure if it's still there. It was there when they were conceived, and it was there up to 3 or 4 years ago. You find in there a verse of Scripture out of a King James Bible right on the wall. First thing you run into when you go in there. You know what it says? It says they'll beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. And they won't study war anymore. That's the whole scheme of the United Nations. The only problem was there's another verse in the Bible that precedes that one that says they're going to beat their plowshares into swords and their pruning hooks into spears. What's that mean? It means there's going to be a big war before we have peace. And we haven't had the big war yet. I mean, the big one is yet to come. You think if you wanted to be a really humanitarian, you'd be preparing your children to get ready for war. But how terrible. How could you ever say that? Why would you prepare your children for war? Well, why would you prepare them for a hurricane? I mean, don't you think if you just told them the hurricane isn't coming, and if everybody believed that enough, that it wouldn't come? Certain things mankind has no control over. One is the elements. Mankind has no control over the elements. About the time they say, boy, you know, we've solved this great problem. God floods the Mississippi and it's all gone. You know, about the time, I'll tell you the answer for both people. The hurricane. You know, that sounds real insensitive. But you know what I heard when they had this last tropical depression come through down there? And they said, well, they had, given the Coast Guard leaves because they knew that there wouldn't be as many immigrants coming across. Well, they knew it too. They just didn't say it the way I said it. Man can't control, I'll tell you something else man can't control. He can't control the wickedness of his own heart. And whenever you get somebody trying to deal with the wickedness of their own heart, you better just get ready. Why teach American history? Because we understand the future. I can take a look at where I was and at where I am and tell you where we're going to be. Because I've got a Bible in front of me that tells me that. Why teach American history? You need to understand it. How, if I don't understand American history, how do I understand what my relationship is to this government? I'll be honest with you, it's confusing at the least. I am not a radical. I'm not calling for revolution or dissension. I don't believe in that. But I am confused at best at my role. I realize what Romans, come to the book of Romans chapter 13. We'll start there. My philosophy, to be honest with you, as I've grown older, I've become more and more fixed in this. I think little events make character or build character. Little events in your life made you what you are right now. And years ago, I never thought when I did this, I never thought it would amount to much. I never thought I would ever recall it. I have no idea what happened to this thing, but I've used it, I guess, probably 100 times as an illustration to you folks. And it's a little World War II medallion I found, or World War I medallion I found outside of my uncle's home down near the spring in Livingston, Tennessee. I mean, you talk about back in the boonies. You had to walk down the spring to get water. They had the old rain barrel behind the house where the rain, you take a bath in the rain barrel. And I don't have no idea how this got back there. Nobody else lived there. But we were playing down along this creek bank one day, and I found a little copper medallion, and on there was a doughboy with a little helmet and a Sharps long rifle down in a kneeling position, and around the outside of that thing, I'll never forget the day I die, it said, "Trust in the Lord and keep your powder dry." I have no idea what happened to that medallion. I don't know. I know I kept it for a few years. It's gone. I haven't seen it in over 30 years, yeah. Man, that sounds like a long time. I haven't seen it in that length of time, but I never forgot what it said. And the longer I live, the more that becomes my motto. Trust in the Lord and keep your powder dry. I don't know what else to tell you. I know in Romans chapter 13, verse right here. Romans chapter 13, let every soul be subject to the higher powers. For there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. I understand that. Sometimes we get a little too American. We put our Americanism in front of our Christianity. I'm going to tell you something right now. You can serve God whether America is a democracy or a communist regime. It's just a little easier when it's a democracy. Amen? And the reason, the sad reason a lot of people are squawking about the condition of America is because they're cowards. I mean, it could very easily be illegal for you to come to church next year. You say, what will we do? Come to church. They could padlock the building out here in the next year. You say, what would we do? We have church in homes. That's why we've been training all these men here how to preach. See, we've been looking to the future. You're in a church this morning, probably has no less than 20, 25 men that are capable of taking a group of people and preaching to them and teaching them the Word of God and doing it in a home rather than in a church building. Why? We're getting ready. Trusting in the Lord, keeping our powder dry. You've got men teaching Sunday school classes this morning around here. Some of them haven't been saved over 3 or 4 years, 5 or 6 years. Some of them never stood in the pulpit before. You say, what are you doing? We're teaching them how to take care of things. There ought not to be any man in this auditorium this morning couldn't stand up for 20 minutes and talk about the Lord Jesus Christ and tell people how to be saved and teach them something from the Bible. Amen. If you're in that condition this morning, God have mercy on you. You ought to be able to do that. You ought to work on your gifts. You say, why? There may come a time when you need it. May come a time when you need it. Paul, the apostle, wrote 13 books in the New Testament. He wrote them under the Roman dictatorship of men like Nero and Constantine and that group back in there. He wrote under that kind of a situation. As a matter of fact, he wrote Romans 13 when Nero was in power, as far as we know. Nero, I guess, was the worst of the Roman dictators. And Paul said, let every soul be subject to the higher powers. And the reference there is to government. Look at verse 3. Rulers are not a terror to good works. Paul wrote, pray for the king. What are you saying, preacher? I'm saying this. It doesn't matter what governmental system you live under as far as you're serving Jesus Christ. You need to make up that point in your mind right now. That'll alleviate a whole lot of the worry. It doesn't matter where I am or what government's in charge, I'm going to serve the Lord. Daniel lived under the Babylonian system and did just fine. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego lived under the Babylonian system and did just fine. You've got prophets that existed under the Syrian and the Babylonian captivities both and did just fine. You've got individuals that lived under the Roman dictatorship. You've got individuals that lived under the dictatorships that have come and gone since then. You've got men right now that have, you've got men that grew up in Rome, Italy, and at the height of the papacy and stood in opposition to the papacy. Why? You serve God no matter what kind of control there is. It's priority. My priority is to serve Him. My priority is to live for Him no matter what. Now, what is my relationship to this government, though? Well, I'm to support it. I ought to pray for it. I think what Bill Clinton needs is a whole lot of prayer. He's part of that stupid elite. I mean, did you hear what he said the other day about Haiti? He said, we have turned two corners in our policy to Haiti, but that still leaves us two more to turn. I heard one of the commentators or the comics say the other night, say, if you turn four corners, aren't you right back where you started? Insane. And people sit back and say, oh, he's just a great orator. Stupid elite. The guy shoots himself in the foot every time he opens his mouth. What is that? But I'm going to tell you what, there are people that are educated sitting back in their homes going, oh, that's profound. Oh, yeah. Oh. And then when they get people that are uneducated and buffoons like Limbaugh or somebody else that knows what's going on, they say, oh, you know, how unkind and uncaring they are. No, they're just not part of the stupid elite. What are we talking about? We're talking about understanding the future. Oh, my responsibility. Now, I believe that. I believe I'm to support whatever government's there. I may not like it, but as far as God will allow me, I'm to support that government. You know, when they passed the law that said you can't pray, Daniel didn't go get together a political organization. He didn't start the moral majorities. He didn't start, you know, the advocacy for prayer in schools. He went home and prayed. Sometimes we get all concerned about what the government will allow us collectively as Christians to do. But that doesn't matter. What matters is what are you as a Christian singular going to do? A fellow said one time, you know, nobody ever wanted to pray in school till they said you couldn't. And I'm going to tell you something right now. You train a child right, child can pray in school. I think it was one of the candidates running for office the other day, one of the liberals, that said, I prayed in school. Nobody told me I couldn't pray in school. I prayed every time I took a test. Well, I mean, she was being a little humorous, but I think nobody can stop that. How can they stop you from praying? You know, come put a chain around your mind. You don't have to open your mouth. You don't have to get down on your knees and look up into heaven, you know. You can bow your head and pray wherever you are. You say, well, the government, they'll pass... It doesn't matter. Let them do whatever they want to do. If your priority is to serve the Lord, it won't make any difference. Why American history? Because the God's law has some stipulations for government as well. Come to 2 Samuel. We'll look at these very quickly this morning. Second Samuel, all the way back, chapter 23. 2 Samuel 23, verse number 3. The God of Israel said, the Rock of Israel spake to me, he that ruleth over men must be just, ruling in the fear of God. Who said that? God did. The same God that told me I had to pray for the powers that be and pray for rulers and be subject to those powers, the same God that told me what my responsibility toward government was, told me what government's responsibility toward me is. See, it's a one-sided issue a lot of times. Well, you're a Christian, you know, how can you be opposed to the government? You know, that's not very Christian-like. Well, it's not very Christian of a government not to be in the fear of God. See, there's a two-way avenue here. The same God that said for me to subject myself to government told government how to treat me. Now, that doesn't change my reaction. I still have to react the same way because, I mean, two wrongs don't make a right. So if my government doesn't do what God said they should do, what's my responsibility? My responsibility is to do what God told me to do and shut my mouth. But I can tell you what's going to happen to the government that doesn't obey God. We just read it in the book of Psalms. All nations that forget God be cast into hell. You say, oh, that'd be a terrible thing. Not if you're doing what God told you to do, it wouldn't. Why? God can take care of you while everybody else is in trouble. And the key to that is look at Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. What happened to the nation of Israel? Anybody, what happened to the whole nation of Israel there? It was destroyed, captive. They burned down the villages, burned down the towns, destroyed the courthouses, destroyed the temple. What happened to Daniel while all that's going on? Daniel became president of the country. You see what I'm saying? You don't have to fear all that stuff. Let it come. as long as I'm doing what God wants me to do. Now, what did Daniel do when he was confronted with a situation where he could not please God and his nation both? He took a bold stand, right? Said, I will not. No, he didn't. He pleaded for compromise. Go over and look at it. You looked at it several weeks ago where Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion, and so he asked the king. He didn't march in there and say, hey, bud, let me tell you what's going to be right now. I am a Christian, and I'm a Christian, and I am not. He went in and asked. He's pleading for a compromise. And God took care of it. You see, the Bible said, if a man's ways please the Lord, he maketh even his what? Enemies to be at peace with him. Sometimes we rule God right out of the picture. I'll be honest with you. The way I look at it may be a little warped, and I don't want to sound calloused and cold, but if God can't take care of the situation, who am I trying to take care of it? I believe God doesn't want me to do certain things, and if God puts me in a position where I don't have any way but to do those things, God understands that. Does He not? I mean, if God says, thou shalt not steal, then God knows that, and if God puts you in a position where you have to steal, what are you going to do? I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to seek a compromise with God. I'm going to say, God, you get me out of this. If you don't want me to steal, you either show me another option I have or get me out of it. It's all in your hands. We think, well, you know, what would I do in that? Listen, we have a big God. We have a big God that while the whole nation was burning in Israel, while the temple was gone, He's taking one guy over there that stood for God and making a president out of him. Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego became sheriffs. He's elevating them while everybody else is getting knocked down. So what am I supposed to do? I'm supposed to honor my government and pray for my government, pray for my king, and obey the laws. You say, well, what if I don't, even if I don't like them? Well, what if my government, God will take care of my government, and when this whole thing is in ruins and in flames, God can promote me right through it. You and I could be eating filet mignon while the rest of the world's starving to death. But it's not how you treat your government, it's how you treat God. God told me, 2 Chronicles chapter 19, I better shut up and just look, right? 2 Chronicles. Say, this isn't very much history. Well, I want to give you a good dose of Bible before we got into history because it gets kind of barren. 2 Chronicles 19:6. Look at verse 5. He set judges in this land throughout all the fenced cities of Judah, city by city, and said to the judges, take heed what ye do, for ye judge not for man, but for the Lord who is with you in the judgment. I believe judges need to be aware of that. I believe judges need to know you're not judging for yourself, you're judging for the Lord. You're accountable to the Lord just like I am. The government is accountable to the Lord just like I am. Psalm chapter 2. We'll close here this morning. I've got a lot of other ones to give you. But while you're turning, we're going to be dealing with a lot of time between the years of 1781 and 1789, somewhere in through there. Those are called the critical years in America's development. That's where we're going to focus for probably a month or better, because that's the years that formulated where you are right now. But in Psalm chapter 2, look, if you will, at verse number 10. Be wise now, therefore, O ye kings, be instructed, ye judges of the earth, serve the Lord with fear and rejoice with trembling. You see, God's got some stipulations in this book for the rulers, too. It's not all one-sided. It's not all where I have to do whatever anybody says. God's got some rule for them. Well, what happens if they don't carry theirs out? Well, we collect guns and have an armed revolution, right? No. We obey God. We do what God told us to do. Well, who's going to take care of the nasty nation then? God will. All nations that forget God will be cast into hell.